The Self-Helpful Podcast is brought to you by Ziglar, your premier source for equipping coaches to help leaders and top performers excel professionally and personally. Visit Ziglar.com and let them inspire your true coaching performance.
This one thing I've just learned in life, that if there's something you really want, if there's something that you care about, it's important to you, if you just keep going and persist and don't stop, it might take you weeks or months. It might take you years or even decades to eventually get it. But if you don't stop and you just quietly and persistently keep going, eventually it'll usually yield.
Welcome to the Ziglar Show, where we inspire your true performance. I'm your host, Kevin Miller. Today, we're talking about opportunity and having a conversation with Eben Pagan, who just launched his new book called Opportunity. Eben is a guy I met 20 years ago amidst the new real estate marketing program. He was innovating then, and he still is today, a greater level, albeit. He's an entrepreneur and investor who has built over 10 different online brands and businesses to the million-dollar level. His businesses are all 100% virtual with no office for over 15 years now. Eben and his family spend more than 6 months per year traveling and living the virtual lifestyle. When his new book, Opportunity, he explains how opportunity is changing, why it is increasing for all of us, and how to find and create more high-quality opportunities for ourselves and our businesses. The book is about how to find and create opportunities in your business and your life. It summarizes 20 years of mindsets, models, and methods for dealing with the explosion of opportunities that are coming our way now and in the future. Well, understanding opportunity is at the heart of succeeding as an entrepreneur, and Eben's goal is to help people understand the nature of opportunity so they can find, create, and take advantage of a lot more of it in their lives. It was a great conversation, right up my alley, of course. And we started off then by getting some of Eben's background too, so you get to know him, including his hippie parents and living in poverty, some of the things that motivated him to do more. We'll dive in right after I give you a couple great resources.
I'm a foodie, and I enjoy learning about the process that brings great foods and beverages from idea to the table. And then I like tasting them and learning the nuances of what creates the most significant tastes, from coffee to cheese to distilled beverages. I did a tequila tasting in Mexico, and recently bourbon, Heaven Hill Bottled in Bond Bourbon. It really impressed me, from the story to the taste. I grew up in Kentucky, where horse racing and bourbon are famous, and I got introduced to Heaven Hill Bottled in Bond Bourbon. It's produced by Heaven Hill Distillery, which has been and still remains family-owned since 1935, and I'm impressed with the bourbon's ultra-rich, smooth taste, and right on the bottle, it states that this bourbon is 7 years old, which is actually three times longer than what's required to be certified as bottled in bond. I feel with beverages, the longer the prep, the better the taste. Being a bottled in bond product means it must pass a list of seven requirements that set the standard for this quality bourbon. So look for it at your local store. Heaven Hill reminds you to think wisely and drink wisely.
Well, here then I bring you Eben Pagan and a great conversation on harnessing opportunities. Okay, Eben, as we start off here, I'm gonna hit it by putting you on the spot. All right, you and I'm sure you have no idea, we have a brief history together. Probably back in 1997, it involved a couple guys. One of them was named Mike Hardwick of the Churchill Mortgage franchise. The other was Joe Stump. And I think we shared a ride from a San Diego airport to a mastermind of Joe's. But I know you from way back then. That's been a while ago.
Wow. You know, well, I was just hanging out with Joe Stump at a mastermind I did. And funny enough, I just wrote to Mike Hardwick after many years because I was trying to find a reference to something he used to say. And so that's amazing.
Interesting. Yes. A long, long time ago. And you were doing some great opportunities then. And now here you are. Back with more. So, you know, I want to talk about opportunity, but with Ziglar, inspiring your true performance. And you're a guy who's been inspiring people for a long time. And so let's get personal. What's inspired you most, even just recently? What's an inspiring event that's occurred in the past day, week, anything?
You know, lately, it's been my family, you know, my wife and my little daughter. I've got a daughter that just turned 5. And, we had something happen yesterday, actually. I was getting ready to do some interviews about this book, and she came in, and one of the things that I have my computer stacked on here is a couple of her games. Yeah. And she saw one of them and she started crying because she wanted it. And I got kind of upset at her and whatever. And anyway, we figured it out and then we made up afterwards. And it really inspired me how intelligent and how emotionally intelligent a five-year-old can be and how caring and loving and thoughtful children can be. I didn't think that I was going to have children in my life, and now I've got one, and she really inspires me.
That is absolutely. There's few things that inspire me as much as my family. I mean, when it comes down to it, that's what matters. Well, I want to dig in. Yeah, speaking of me having a little history with you a long time ago, I mean, you have been at this for a long time. And now what a great fruition is this book that we're going to talk about, but I want to go back there. I don't know your background. And when we look at that and look at the fruition of today, I mean, before you became the Evan Pagan I'm talking to right now, who's on this new book called Opportunity, you started somewhere. And where did your early years, were they supportive or challenging in regards to the success you find yourself in today?
You know, I had hippie parents who, I was born in New York and they didn't want me to grow up in the city. So they moved to Oregon. They heard it was a good place to move, and they were young. They were like 20. So they packed me up when I was a couple of years old and moved out to the woods of Oregon. And I grew up, you know, on government assistance, poor. I didn't know any successful people. I didn't know anyone who even knew anybody that was successful. So I had no role models. I was a long-haired rock and roll guitar player. I dropped out of high school when I was in my sophomore year. I went to a little community college. I dropped out of that college to go on tour with a rock band. And after years of being a long-haired rock and roller and, you know, doing kind of manual labor jobs, I realized that wasn't going to work. You know, at my height, I was making $75 a week as a guitar player. And so I got a real estate license when I was 22 because I just kind of like reasoned people that had, I wanted to have money, you know, $75 a week or, you know, $6 or $10 an hour wasn't doing it for me. And I reasoned that people who were rich had either made their money in real estate or they had invested in real estate. So I thought, okay, I'm going to go learn about real estate and then, you know, figure out how rich people do it. So I got a real estate license and, you know, did horribly in real estate. I sold 1 1/3 homes my first year. People say, how do you sell 1/3 of a home? And your real estate broker takes pity on you and lets you help her with one of hers.
Right.
And I made like way less money than I was making at my manual labor job and like giving guitar lessons. And I discovered that I need to learn sales and marketing. And so I started studying sales and marketing. And that's probably around when I came across Zig's material, when I started studying sales in those early days. And then from there, I just kept studying entrepreneurship. And I went through a phase in my late 20s where I was single and I couldn't get a date. And at this point, I had a better job by then. And I had a nice little apartment and a car. And I thought, okay, wait a minute. I've got the car and the apartment and I don't, you know, no girls will talk to me. So I went and I met a bunch of guys who are really good at getting dates, and I got to know them and I learned about, okay, how the opposite sex works. And then I got a great girlfriend and then it all came together. You know, I had studied marketing and I had studied this dating stuff, and a friend of mine had put an ebook online and he showed me what he was doing. And I wrote a book of dating advice when I was 31 and I put it online and I just taught myself how to do everything. And that was the thing that took off. And so I have kind of a past life as a dating guru. I wrote a book called Double Your Dating with the pen name David D'Angelo, which is kind of, you know, well known in the whole, you know, dating scene. And I grew that business for several years, started hiring people, grew that business 100% virtually, and, you know, got that business up over, well, I mean, we did $133,000 in sales our first year. And most of that was toward the end of the year. And then the next year I'd launched an audio course. I did a seminar. The next year we did 500,000 in sales. Then we did 1.5 million in sales and then 5 million. And I just kept growing. And I built a big team of people all over the country, all over the world. Again, 100% virtual. We started having other teachers come teach relationship and dating advice. And as I was doing that, a lot of people were asking me, hey, Evan, how are you building this business? And so I was just showing them how I was doing marketing. And then several of my friends started launching businesses, teaching different topics. One of them did a business on how to plan your own wedding. And another one built a business teaching poker, people how to play poker. And I watched these people go out, you know, one of them became a millionaire. And so I realized, okay, I need to start teaching people what I'm learning about business.
Yeah.
And so this is kind of the story of my life now, as I go learn something and I spend a couple of years getting into it. And then I realize, gosh, other people would want to learn this. And then I make some courses and I teach it. And so I've taught entrepreneurship and marketing and productivity. And, you know, it all culminates now in After now teaching entrepreneurship for about 10 years and also investing in several technology companies and advising them, about 2 years ago, I realized it's probably when it came together. I was looking around all these successful people in my life, and I've interviewed, you know, met and interviewed hundreds of millionaires and billionaires. And I just saw this common denominator that they're just better at opportunity. Mm-hmm. They're better at finding and selecting and creating opportunities. And I think if you think about it, you look around your life at the people you know that are most successful, they're the ones that are great at finding and spotting opportunities and then making a decision. They're good at making decision about opportunity. And once I had that common denominator, it just changed the way I saw everything. I mean, even though I had been studying this area for a long time, I really went to work on thinking about this way. And it just changed how I approached my life. And then I started writing this book about a year ago. I got about a year into writing this book. And I just put everything that I know in there about creating opportunities, building a life that generates lots of opportunities, selecting your best opportunities.
So going back there, hippie parents moved to the woods. There was a good opportunity for you to just do the music thing and go along. Was there a point when you realized you had some drive, or you wanted more than the norm, or you did want more resources or more abundance? Was there a catalyst, or did you just kind of look back and find that this just happened?
I mean, the catalyst was just being poor, you know, driving a lot of cars that cost $200 or $300 and having to change the, you know, alternators and fix flat tires myself, and, you know, having them break down and not having nice things. And, you know, it was just hard. And I just made the decision, I'm going to go and figure this out. My first home, I would buy and sell music gear. My dad was he would always go to Goodwill stores and, you know, garage sales and pick things up. And so I was kind of a little bit of a horse trader. I'd buy a guitar for $50 or $100 and then try to sell it for, you know, $200, or buy some stereo equipment at a garage sale and try to sell it. And my first home, I was 22 when I got my own place, and I bought a little trailer and I traded it for $1,500 plus a guitar that I had.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
And I moved into that thing and I was so excited to have my own pad. I remember I was happier moving into that place than any of the nice places that I have lived, you know, since. I was on my own. And the first month, I think the trailer space rent was $135, and I couldn't pay the rent the first month that I moved in. I couldn't scrape together like the $135 I was going to be. So I had to sell one of my guitar amps that I really liked. And I had this really nice Mesa Boogie guitar amp. And I remember just being so bummed that I had to go and sell my amp. And then I thought, like, if I can't pay it the first month, how am I going to, you know, make it in my life? And I remember that feeling. It stayed with me for a long time. And I just said, I don't want to ever be here anymore. Yeah. I don't want this for my life.
Well, similar question on the entrepreneurial, you know, standpoint of, mm-hmm. Did you at some point decide that maybe from a wealth standpoint, you saw these wealthy people and they seemed to be in real estate, that you decided I want to be a business owner as opposed to an employee, which I would assume the majority of your peers probably were doing that. Or again, is that just, it was just an opportunity that presented itself and you went forward from there?
Well, if you're an entrepreneur, you got to kind of enjoy punishment.
True.
The entrepreneurial path is a little bit of a glutton for punishment. The rewards can be huge and they're wonderful, but you also have to try a lot of things and you have to stay with it and you have to keep going. Yeah. I don't think I didn't set out, you know, when I started, I didn't say like, I'm going to be an entrepreneur and I'm going to have my own business, captain of my own ship. I just got a real estate license and thought, realtors, you know, can make money selling. They were always driving nice cars and everything. And I thought that's what I would do. You know, I thought I'd be a real estate agent. I'd make $1 million. I'd buy a little house in Oregon and everything would be fine. Mm-hmm. And it didn't work out that way, you know, but fortunately I went on and I stayed with it. And it took me, from when I started when I was 22, it took me 9 years of just continuing to try things. And that was, I was 31. That was 9 years later that one of them finally worked out. And it was this little book of dating advice, the most unlikely thing.
Yeah.
It's just so not, when I talk to friends, I was just talking to a friend of mine who was down here. I was like, when you met me, did you think, like, who would have guessed that dating advice would have been my thing? I mean, I'm a guitar player and, you know, and then from there, who would have guessed that I would be teaching entrepreneurship and investing in companies? And it's just these really interesting adventures. I mean, getting married, having a child. I mean, that's the biggest surprise of all of them. But I think if you just keep going and exploring new things in life and finding new passions and, you know, trying new stuff, you have to be the beginner and you have to deal with looking kind of funny and, you know, a little bit of embarrassment and, you know, not being perfect at things. But as long as you can, you know, feel good about like making mistakes and getting back up and staying at it, I think you can get somewhere eventually.
Well, when you look at that from music to real estate to the dating and then on, do you see or recognize now a common thread in there, aside from, you know, just business in general, but was there a common thread of what you enjoyed, what you cared about, what you wanted to impart to people, or did that also evolve to some point to where it is now?
When I look at those, my friend, I see emotional and psychological instability.
Perfect. Perfect. There we go.
That's really what I see. I don't know. No, not so much. One thing about it is that I try to bring them all with me, you know, so I try to take whatever I wasn't doing this intentionally, but, you know, if I learn something, I try to bring it and use it in whatever else I do. You know, in real estate, I wasn't doing that well. And then I got a job working for a real estate training company, Joe Stumpf, who you know. In fact, this is the way that happened. I was in real estate, I was 22 or 23, and I went to one of his free half-day seminars.
Yep.
And I was so astonished, but I couldn't afford to buy the tapes that he was selling there, you know, or the seminars. And I went up and tried to talk to him at the end. And, you know, there I was with my ponytail and, you know, like it wasn't going anywhere. And one day at the Goodwill store in Eugene, Oregon, I went in. This is like maybe a few weeks after or something. And they had one of his tape sets there for $1.
Beautiful.
And when I saw that, I couldn't believe it. I was like, I just saw this guy. This is amazing. And so I got it. And I went to my manual labor job. And I work in a copper shop, and I used to use this pneumatic hammer, which was very loud. And I had to wear these earmuffs. And so I'd put on my earbuds and I'd stick them under there and I'd listen to these tapes over and over. And then I went back again like a few weeks later, and they had another one of his tape sets for $1. And so I was so stoked. Anyway, I called up this fun for you to maybe know. I called up and made friends with his telemarketers, and I would just call them up all the time just to talk to them. And they started sending me his tapes, and they'd like, you know, slip me one from like the advanced program. Uh-huh. You know, they sent me one with Jay Abraham that I remember that was amazing. And I just listened to that over and over. But the point is that at one point I was like, how can I work with these guys? What could I do to work with this company? And eventually I was listening to the tapes and I heard that, they didn't sound very good. They, you know, they had a lot of low quality recordings of their live programs. And I called up the telemarketers and I was like, you know what? I could probably help you make your tapes sound better. And they said, you know what? Our sound guy just quit. And they put me on the phone with George. He used to run the company. Uh-huh. And I was like, hey, you know, I know how to do audio stuff because, you know, my background in music.
Yeah.
And I think I could help you with your audio. And so they had me come and do audio for one of their audio visual for one of their seminars, which I had never done, by the way. I'd never done audio visual for a seminar. I'm like, I can figure this out.
Yeah.
And then I helped, you know, I used what I learned in the, you know, the audio world. And then I did that. And then I took what I learned there and I used it in the next thing. And I try to bring them all with me and, you know, combine them and use them together. That's a theme.
Well, so it's interesting because one of the questions I like to ask, don't always do it, but if it pertains, was there, when you look back, was there any specific big break? And I'm wondering, did you just tell me what one of them was to go and call and have that opportune moment where you have an offer and they had a need? Is that a big break along the way?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm meeting Joe. Yeah. And then through him, I met my mentor, Jerry Ballinger, who's no longer alive. It was just an incredible human being. And that's how I got really connected up to Jay Abraham. It opened a lot of, you know, a lot of portals in my reality to go to work with Joe. And yeah, one of the things I've learned in my life, I when I was on tour with a rock band, I was 18, and I was in a Christian rock band that was from Florida, and we would go and play at schools, and we would play like 2 or 3 concerts a day. And so, and this is, you know, like 1990-ish, 1989, 1990. Mm-hmm. And so imagine there's like 5 long-haired white guys and a black guy, and we're driving around in this truck going through the South and through the Midwest. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we just looked like a total circus. And we would play at all these different schools. And at one point we were staying in these really bad hotels and like things. It just was like, I opened up the drawer in one of my hotels cause we didn't have much money as we were touring, and there was dirt. There was actually like clumps of dirt in the drawer of the hotel and like old food. And I said, like, we got to do something. Yeah. And so I got so frustrated. I picked up the phone and I just started calling other hotels around that area and just saying like, hey, I'm on tour with this band. You know, we're doing some good. Would you guys give us a good deal on a hotel? And I just started dialing until I found a nice hotel that would give us a deal that we could afford. And from then on, that was my job because I was so determined to not stay in places that had right. dirt in the drawer. And that there was a formative experience for me. I learned that you could just, if you wanted something bad enough, you could go and just make it happen. And that served me pretty well, you know, with Joe, and I just mentioned Joe Stump here. Yeah. You know, I lived in Eugene, Oregon. I was nobody. I was, you know, some long-haired kid. And I just called up and made friends with his telemarketers, and I would send them gifts and they'd send me things. And, you know, I just got to know these people because I knew that guy was a portal to success. He knew a lot about success, and it turned out to be true. And going to work with him and, you know, just, I mean, I didn't at first when I went to work with him, I think that I was making $400 a month, I think, when I worked for Joe. And that would involve, I was like building the audio equipment. I kept it at my place. I would fly out and do an event. I'd work for like a week. And I'll do whatever it takes just to get the opportunity to kind of do it. And then I worked my way up. But I could keep going. Another story is coming to mind right now about pursuing something I'm doing right now. No,
tell it.
Please. Yeah. This one thing I've just learned in life that if there's something you really want, if there's something that you care about that's important to you, if you just keep going and persist and don't stop, it might take you weeks or months. It might take you years or even decades to eventually get it. But if you don't stop and you just quietly and persistently keep going, eventually it'll usually yield. My wife and I, we met at the Burning Man Festival almost 9 years ago now. And I also found visionary art, which you see on all my walls around me here. And I'm very passionate about it. I think it's the greatest art in the world. And I've gotten to know many of these artists. In fact, a visionary artist, Andrea Jones, did the cover of my book of Opportunity, which I happen to have right here.
Yes. Yeah, so right. I'll show you mine. We can trade book covers here. Yes.
Then. Yeah, totally. So you can see this cool picture on the cover here.
Love it.
And so after meeting these artists and collecting their art, I've started finding other artists that I like. And I found this, a piece on eBay, a drawing that I bought by this artist and is totally unknown. And then, I really liked it. I liked it a lot. And so I started researching this person and, you know, it turns out that they've died a few years ago. And then I started calling around saying like, well, I wonder if I could find any more of this person's art. And this is kind of maybe end of last year or something, probably, I don't know, I'm going to make this up 3, 4, 5 months ago. And I just couldn't find anywhere, you know, I just couldn't. And this was an unknown artist. And I just kept calling people and, you know, every few days I'd do a little research on the internet and email someone randomly who knows about visionary art. And everybody just said, no. The person I had bought the piece from knew the artist, but it was dead. Didn't have any leads for me. I eventually said, all right, I need to find this person. Like I just need to find, you know, somebody in his family or something. I actually hired an agency down where they came from and sent them like a few $100 and said, can you help me? And that was dead. And they didn't find anything for me. And I was, you know, starting to get a little bit bummed out. But I just kept going and I made a file, everything I had learned, everything I knew, and I kept going and going. And then eventually I found somebody at an art gallery, maybe a month and a half ago or something, who knew him. And then the person said, oh yeah, I've got one of his drawings too. And I bought another one. And then now, you know, this person might know other people. The point is that when you find something that's important to you, it's not even about persistence. I mean, persistence is kind of it. It's just, you just go and make it happen and you stay with it for however long it takes in order to make the thing happen that's important to you. That served me really well in my life.
And thanks to these sponsors for bringing us today's show.
Most of today, you will be indoors, likely your home or your office. I am as well. Even with my treks out into the woods, I spend a lot of time inside. And we're going to take about 20,000 breaths, according to the EPA. The indoor air is 2 to 5 times more polluted than the outdoor air, sometimes up to 100 times more polluted. At my studio, we have heat being forced through old ducts. I walk on carpet full of years of junk. No idea what's floating in the air that I'm taking constant gulps of. The solution is an air purifier, and Air Doctor is just the best. Air Doctor filters out 99.99% of dangerous contaminants and allergens such as pollen, pet dander, dust mites, mold, bacteria, viruses. They do it so your lungs don't have to. Air Doctor comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you don't love it, just send it back for a refund minus shipping. Go to airdoctorpro.com and use promo code Kevin. And depending on the model, you'll receive up to 39% off or up to $300 off. Exclusive to podcast customers, you will also receive a free 3-year warranty on any unit, which is an additional $84 value. So to get this special offer, go to airdoctorpro.com. Use promo code Kevin. AirDoctorPro.com, promo code Kevin. Thankfully, the days of building a business website, then having this massive endeavor to integrate an online store are gone. Today, Shopify has fixed all that. I had one business where we actually built the entire website on Shopify's platform. So whether you're just starting out or you're selling $1 million of product already, Shopify is just the industry leader. It works the same for physical products or online and digital, and Shopify is just hands down the best out there. Most importantly, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. It's 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Getting people to buy is not that hard, at least to the buying point, but getting them to actually give their payment info is, and Shopify is king in that department. They also have top-tier customer service, which I think is critical. You can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/Kevin. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/Kevin to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/Kevin.
So, okay, it's interesting that you said it's not about persistence, because I just wrote that down to come back to. So if it's not persistence, is it just a stalwart commitment?
My wife, she says it like this when she sees me doing this. She calls it, "It shall be so."
Okay.
She just says, "It shall be so." And that's the way it is for me. Like, when there's something that is important to me, I mean, there are things like in my family where, you know, last night, my wife and my daughter and I, we got into a little bit of an upset, and my wife was doing something with my daughter that I wasn't very happy about. And, you know, it's creating pressure and so forth. And I could just see that there's a pattern where she's doing something where she doesn't understand, you know, what's happening. And my wife's amazing, by the way. I'm definitely not, you know, I've learned so much from her, and she's an incredible mom. But you know how these things happen in a family. And I just realized, oh, there's this thing. This is happening. And once she understands what this is, she won't want to do this anymore. But a lot of times in relationships, we have defenses, mm-hmm. and you know, I have this just as much as she does. And you know, some defenses came up and it kind of wasn't happening, but I'm going to do it. Like, I mean, this message is going to get across at some point. And it's not because I'm going to like change my wife, or I'm going to make her do it, or I'm going to force her, or I'm going to threaten it. There's none of that. It's just something that should be so, like, and I'm going to just make it so. And it feels, it kind of feels pretty natural to me at this point, you know. Yeah. In the book, I actually write about this idea that I think we live in a reality that's friendly to creativity, meaning that the root word of creativity is create, that is friendly to imagining things the way you want to in your mind, and then coming out here into reality and creating what you want to create, making it the way that you would like to make it. If we look at our environments, where you are, where I am, and where most people are, they've all been created by humans. They were designed, architected, all the, you know, the materials, the surfaces, like, it's all been shaped by human beings. And more in the future, we're going to be doing that. And that's a key skill to have, is to imagine things the way you want them, and then to go and create them the way that you want them. And you don't have to have anything special to do it. You can rearrange the furniture in your room. You can just imagine it in different places and move it around. Or you can imagine a relationship being the way that you want it. Or you can imagine knowing a particular person. And once you do, you then just make it a little personal project. And then again, you stick with it until it's complete.
So is that a key statement, foundation of opportunity, of this book, of this message, is that reality is malleable, make it into what you want it to be?
Yeah, I call it the creativerse. It's a combination of the words creative and universe. Yeah. And I believe that we live in a universe that is friendly to creativity. And even further, if you look at what's happening, so everything's accelerating. And yeah. I call it the great acceleration. We are in the knee of the curve of the acceleration of change, unlike anything we've ever seen in the history of the planet. And this is all fueled by technology and the internet. Ray Kurzweil talks about what he calls the law of accelerating returns, where he tracked price performance increase of computers over, 100 years, things like Moore's law. And he saw that, every 2 years we're getting twice the performance for half the price, which is why if you think back 20 years ago, you remember that this thing, was the little flip phone in your pocket with the buttons. And now it's a supercomputer that's more powerful than all the computers were in the world, maybe 50 years ago or something like that. And when you get one of these now, you notice it's faster. Mm-hmm. Like up until recently, you didn't really notice too much of a difference. You get the new one, and it's like a little better. But now you get the new one, you go, wow, that's faster. And oh my gosh, it understands what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. this is incredible. I can talk to it. Now I can do things for me. Well, that's going to go faster and faster and faster to the point where, Ray Kurzweil believes that we're going to get to the point where we're going to extend our neocortex into the cloud, and we're going to be able to make things happen just by thinking. And this is, if you just look at the latest stuff that's happening in the last few months here, computers can actually look at, you put the cap on, computer can look at your thoughts and make a picture of what you're thinking. They're to the point where now you can almost think and type and it just knows what you're thinking. This is actually happening. And, go fast forward 5-10 years. If you want to, when I started to design a website, I had to go buy expensive software and figure out how to work and, get the thing. It would take weeks or months to get a website set up. A good friend of mine was just over and he's a designer, and he showed me a website that he built. He said, "Hey, I just went and signed up for one of these services. I got online. They have a free thing." And I made this beautiful website. He showed it to me. It's got pictures. It's beautiful. And he made it in a few hours from start to finish. And if we go forward another 5 or 10 years, I believe we're going to be able to just like push a button and say, we're going to start designing a website and then start talking about what I want to see. I'm going to say, I want it to be blue. I want it to be a little bit lighter now, a little bit more green. Put an opt-in box over here, put my picture over here. Okay. And here are the words I want. And we'll just be able to speak and it will all be appearing in front of us. And I think that's the reality we're moving towards in the future, where at the speed of thought and conversation, we're going to be able to create things. And then we have to practice now, because we get to do it in slow motion. We get to practice in slow motion, imagining things and then creating them. And if we're not ready for that when it comes, those people that are ready for it and that are doing it are going to have such a huge advantage.
It sounds amazing. And it sounds, as you talk it in that way, it sounds daunting. It sounds godlike, speaking things into life. It's a ridiculous. So let's come back to opportunity here. You're talking about opportunity. You wrote this book. I mean, I went through it. You've got so much in there. If you have to do, the age old elevator pitch that gets worn out, that cliche. But if you do that, from a stage, what with opportunity, what with this message is a primary loudspeaker that you want people to understand and recognize about opportunity?
Yeah. Well, our options are exploding across our lives. We have more options and more opportunities than we ever have, and they're growing exponentially. There are more options to try new foods and go new places and watch new movies and, travel and to meet new people and to try new businesses, and very key to learn new things. The learning landscape has changed dramatically. I think that probably over the last 10 or 15 years, we've experienced probably a 10x in learning efficiency, meaning that if you want to learn something right now, instead of going down to the, your local school or college and getting an average teacher to give you an average education, teaching an average group of people, now you can go online and you can find the best teacher and one that matches you, who's using better teaching methods, and you can go at your own pace. And if you want to hear something over and over, you can. You want to rewind, you want to start over, you can find the niche thing that you want to learn. And so the higher quality education, the more niche, and then being able to learn from better people, this is an explosion. Again, I think that we're at like a 10x efficiency, and no one's talking about this. No one realizes, I can learn 10 times more efficiently right now. You can go online to Khan Academy and get this brilliant guy who's teaching everything on there for free. I just went and looked. I couldn't believe this. Do you know how many people have watched Khan Academy videos? Mm-hmm. 1.5 billion.
Wow.
Wow. Right. This is a new thing that's going on right now. So the opportunity of education that's a big one. I'll stop there, but you know, if you want to go down that rabbit hole a little bit. So opportunity is exploding for all of us. There's more opportunity, right, across more domains. And it's a creative thing. It's, we can create it for ourselves, particularly because we can connect to the knowledge, the people, the ideas, the information that we want. But with all of this increase comes what I call opportunity shock, right? There's too much.
That's exactly what I was going to ask about, because it feels overwhelming. Even reading your book, on one hand, incredibly inspiring, and you want to look at it, you recognize it. So you're helping us recognize, become aware of it, get excited about it. But then the next thing is, how do we harness it? Or I guess, you know, which ones do we do? We have a finite amount of time. So yes, which you get into in the book.
Yeah. Yeah. So exactly. So, you know, Barry Schwartz wrote The Paradox of Choice. He says, more choices are better. If we only have one choice, having a second choice feels amazing. It's like, oh, that's great. Having three choices, awesome. Four or five, great. Now I can choose between things. Six, seven, eight, nine choices, 10. Oh, wait a minute. I don't know if I want that many. Uh-huh. You know, when you go into the restaurant and you get yes, the menu, and there's like 10 pages of like 50 things on, in, oh my gosh, right? There's at some point there's a, well, that's just, I mean, you ain't seen nothing yet, right? In the next few years, what's coming. So what do we have to do? Well, there are opportunity as a nature. Okay. There's a whole chapter in the book on the nature of opportunity. And there are these kind of six principles that I've kind of discovered / predicted. And one of them, for example, is that opportunity, the windows of opportunity are going to open faster. They're going to stay open for a shorter amount of time, and they're going to close faster. So because there's more, it doesn't mean that it's going to stay the same, right? So we have to be ready. Another thing is that there's more opportunity, but there are going to be a lot more small opportunities and a few big opportunities. More small opportunities, fewer big ones. Well, we want the big ones in our life. Those are the ones that we want. So we have to be ready for those, and we have to be ready to make a commitment. We have to be able to decide. And so we need methods for that. Inside the book, I've got a whole bunch of my favorite mental models for choosing the best opportunity and making a decision and then committing to it. We also have to be emotionally prepared for opportunity, because in a lot of ways, if we shut down, it's because we're overwhelmed. We emotionally don't feel confident. We don't feel like we can, you know, move forward. So we've got to learn to manage fear, and we've got to learn to manage envy and jealousy and some of these other emotions that we've got. Most of us have not learned emotional skills for a business context, and that's really important as well. And we need to learn to collaborate. I mean, many of our biggest opportunities are from collaborations. When you collaborate with another person who's very different from you, you have access to opportunities that you didn't have access to before. If, let's say that you're a computer programmer and you're good at programming computers, but you're not good at design, usually very different personality types are good at design versus programming. Right. Or let's say that you're a designer, but you're not very good at computer programming. Each of those has a limited kind of scope of the opportunities that are available to them. But if they come together and they collaborate, and the developer does the developing and the designer does the designing, the collaboration can give them access. They can create a piece of software that works. They can do things that that individuals can't do. And so each of us can do that as long as we learn about collaboration, what it is and how it works. And then we do it with people who are very different from us.
So just looking at opportunity again, overall, as we look at this and you talk about how it's ramping up, where would you, as an expert in this field, looking at the culture, where are we possibly missing it most right now? And are we at risk of missing out on harnessing, on capitalizing on opportunity if we don't understand X?
Well, the biggest domain of opportunity probably is in this knowledge domain, right? In this, because we're knowledge workers, we're in a knowledge economy. And I mean, Ray Kurzweil says about the only thing that has value anymore is information. Because if we have the right education, we have the right information, then we can do whatever it is that we want to do, right? Knowledge is power. And knowledge is now being packaged up in the form of courses, in videos. It's even in free videos that you can get value from and so forth. But most people haven't gone and learned this skill of identifying the knowledge that they have that's valuable, and then putting it into a training or a course or a video or a book. They haven't learned to organize the knowledge they have and then make it into something that other people would want to buy or that would be valuable to other people.
Right.
So that's one side of the equation. I think everyone really needs to learn how to do that no matter what they're doing in life, is to package up information and teach other people, right? Learn how to teach better. That, if you don't have that skill, it doesn't really matter what you're doing in the future. It's going to be harder to do that thing. And the other one that I really like is coaching. And I've done this a lot. And I've learned a lot about it over the years. A couple of years ago, we made a decision to create a whole course on coaching. And in doing that, I learned so much. I define coaching as supporting another person through a transition in their life. Okay, so coaching is supporting another human being as they're going through a transition. And we're all going through more transitions in our lives because everything's accelerating. And if you see the other dynamic too, also in, you know, we have social media. So instead of having friends, we have social media, right? I call it anti-social media. Mm-hmm. So with this, you got more of a barrier, but it's taking more of your time. And then you have less support from the people that you care about. So as you're going through the transitions in your life, in your personal life, in your business, with your family, with your health, moving, jobs, whatever, when you're going through the transition, that's when you need the support of your friends, but you don't have it because we're more separated from each other. And so I think this is one of the things that's fueling the rise of coaching. Is coaching is essentially being a professional friend in a lot of ways. And you learn the skills of supporting another person, understanding what they're trying to do, helping them clarify, but then letting them do it, which is harder than doing it for them.
Yeah.
Paradoxically, right? Letting them do it and then supporting them, holding them accountable. And I would say these two areas, these are my favorite areas. When people ask me like, what kind of business should I start? Or I want to be an entrepreneur. I say, try one of these, you know, start, be a coach. You know, you can get started for very little money. You learn so many valuable skills. And with entrepreneurship, because when you try a business, right, maybe only one in four or five of them works out the way that you want it to. You want to try businesses and learn things that the skills are going to come with you and make you more successful through the rest of your life, you know, anyway. And so, and I also think that marketing is another key skill that we have to learn, you know, how to find customers and get them to buy stuff from you.
Right.
Yeah, this is the literacy of the online future.
Okay, well, I'm curious now to come back to coaching because that's where I was headed because you're talking about knowledge. And I mean, I've lived my life here in the personal development world and I hear you testifying to, you know, the power of knowledge, the increase in it, and that's great. I have personal heartburn though for even my own role in this and putting it out, but are people actually benefiting? Is it just tickling in their ears? Is it just entertainment? Is it, you know, hopeful stuff to hear, but are they actually doing something with it? I was going to ask you about that, but you already came in and said you want people to package it better, teach it better. And then the coaching aspect specifically, and you use the word doing to help them actually do something with that knowledge. And that feels like a responsibility because, you know, as well as I do, you can make a lot of money by pumping out knowledge left and right over and over day in and day out. And yet at the end of the day though, did somebody actually harness it? Did they use it? Did they change?
It's one of the tragedies, you know, to me, it's one of the tragedies in my life and my business. Fortunately, you know, I think we teach really high quality stuff and we have so many success stories and I'm very blessed that wherever I move around our industry, people have been influenced by me. And, you know, I know that our materials benefit a lot of people, but unfortunately a lot of people, you know, they buy the course and they don't do anything with it or they don't even go in, you know, and that's tough when that happens.
Yeah. So looking at opportunity now, I just want to ask you you're looking at this big wide world and all the knowledge is out there. And you said, when you have people ask you, you know, where to get into that knowledge and coaching is a great place to, but when we look at opportunity, one, yeah. I know it's the wrong question to ask. Okay, Evan, tell me, you know, what's a great opportunity for me? And you're going to say, well, I don't know you. So obviously it has some personal aspect, but I would love you because, I mean, who doesn't want to know from where your standpoint is looking at opportunity? You've written the book now that as you look out there and you're seeing these cultural phenomenons happen, you're seeing these trends happen that, granted, we all have to know our own skills, talents, abilities, giftings before we jump into anything. But where do you see some specific industries, some specific areas where you see, man, there's just going to be more and more. Well, I'll ask you both sides, more and more opportunity here and probably less over here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I know it's a big question.
No, it's a good one. I'll speculate here. You know, warning, use this information at your own risk, you know, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I mentioned Ray Kurzweil, you know, many years ago, I started reading books by futurists, like books like Mega Trends and, you know, Techno Trends and some of these things. And I realized that futurists were really onto something. They're really onto something. Like if you would have gotten a book by a futurist 10 or 20 years ago and read it, and then seen what they were talking about and then said, okay, I'm going to go I'm going to go to work in one of these fields, or I'm going to go try to start something here, or I'm going to go learn about this industry, you'd probably be in a pretty good place because they were seeing what was going to happen in the future. And what most people do is they make decisions about what's happening now or what happened in the past. And then they, you know, then they put their past in their future, as Werner Erhard says, and that doesn't work out that well. In the last few years, I've really been studying futurism. I've got a project that I'm working on right now in futurism. And it's been important to me to watch futurism and watch futuristic trends. So if you you can just start reading things like TechCrunch, you know, and or like sign up for Peter Diamandis' newsletter and just start like looking at, go to some of the trend websites. And what you'll see is there are areas where people are investing and where venture capitalists are investing. I mean, right now, you know, on the technological side, things like artificial intelligence and robotics and nanotechnology and software in general and computers, like these are very high growth and they're a huge deal. They're big, big, big industries to get into. On a little bit more edgy kind of side, if you look at things like cryptocurrency and the marijuana industry, like these are very edgy, very high risk, you know, very likely to have issues, but also billionaires are being made in these places very quickly. And that's one of the things, and I read about this in the book, is that you find opportunity, the like big growth opportunity at the edges. And the edges, I mean, at like the edge of culture and sometimes even at the edge of like legality in a lot of ways. You know, if you look at Uber, an amazingly innovative and very successful global company, right? Well, I think largest private company in the world or something along these lines. Or maybe it's the largest venture funded private company. Anyway, it's, you know, $60 or $70 billion valuation company. They're having all kinds of trouble. You know, they weren't legal in a lot of the cities they went into. And the cities like said, hey, that's illegal for you to be doing that. You know, the cab drivers, whatever. And they just said, hey, look, this is what people want here. This is actually better for humans. And this is what everybody asks for. So we're just going to keep going and we'll pay the fine, you know? And then the laws change to kind of catch up with this. So big like business and growth opportunities and financial opportunities, oftentimes you're dealing with kind of the edges of things and you've got to take a little more risk and you've got to be a little bit more, have a little more courage to do these things. Read about futurism, study some of the trends and where things are going, because there's so many exciting things happening and they're all converging and they all touch each other in different ways. They all influence each other. When social media showed up, everybody said, oh, what's that? But you know what? That's impacting all these different industries. And if you're not using it for advertising or other things, you're kind of locked out in a lot of ways. That's a short answer.
Well, and I mentioned a little bit about, of course, we've all got to audit somewhat our gifts, talents, abilities, and whatnot. And I know you talk about in the book some more of, I don't think this is your word, but my paraphrasing, you know, how does the average person, I mean, we've got a group right here, the Ziglar Show, in the podcast arena overall, these are aspiring people. These are people who know there's opportunity. They're people who see opportunity. And some of them may have a couple. A lot of them feel like, oh, I got too many ideas. And they want to understand what that filter is for them, because on the side of taking action is generally risk of your finances, your time, your spouse, your whatever, all those issues. So from a low level in that standpoint, where can you just give the audience here a little bit of fodder for just some high level filtering mechanisms?
The number one thing to kind of address that I would recommend is most people haven't invested enough time learning about their own personality, actually learning who they are. And there are a lot of great personality tests and systems out there, things like the Myers-Briggs type indicator or the Kolbe or even the Enneagram is kind of woo-woo, but really profound, you know, or the DISC or the Strengths Finder. Yeah. There are a few of these. You can just go look up personality tests. I really like the Myers-Briggs personality type indicator, the MBTI. You can take free tests online for a lot of these. You can find free Myers-Briggs tests, and then it gives you back an analysis and it tells you about your personality. And then you can go learn about other people and their personalities. The five love languages, that one is great. Mm-hmm. Okay. For this, because it brings in a whole other, like a relationship kind of element, but take a few personality tests and then look at what they say about you. and then read up on all the different. So if you take a Myers-Briggs personality type indicator, and let's say that it says that you're an extroverted sensing thinking judger, there's four pairs of things, and it says you're an ESTJ. Well, then go and read up about what that means. Go read, spend an hour reading all the different websites that talk about that personality type. Go look up your spouse or your partner, have them take the test, and then go look up their personality type. And then go look up the websites that show how those two personality types interact. And then you'll start seeing yourself and you'll realize, oh my gosh, yeah, that is me. And that is my pattern. And then it'll tell you what types of careers are great for these types of people. Yeah. And then you can go and say, you know what, that would be an interesting thing. And then you can go learn something about that. You can learn about how to interact with other people. I really feel like studying your personality and learning about what makes you unique, what your unique gifts are, and then going and developing those and going and finding other people that are of that type or groups of people where that type hangs out, or communities or masterminds or meetups or online forums where those people go and hang out and are interested in something. Go learn more about your personality and what people like you are great at. And then within that, you can find your own little universe. You can find your own little niche where you can do something. But if you don't know what you're great at, if you don't understand what makes you unique and your unique way of seeing the world, it's very hard to then go and do anything proactively or to recognize whether something's an opportunity for you. Once you understand your personality better and other people's personalities, and then you understand who, like what you could be when you grow up, like your real potential of success and contribution and collaboration, you don't have a way to judge an opportunity because you don't know whether it's a good one for you or if it's going to help you move on your own path. I was reading in a book some research that said that our brains, right, we have all these different brain centers. We have like a visual cortex and we have a language center, and we have all these different centers that they're very different sizes in different people. There's a lot of variability in the sizes. So you might have a visual cortex that's like 50% bigger than mine, or I might have a language center that's, 30% smaller than yours. And when you put all those different sizes together, that's part of what makes us unique. It's how we have these different personalities. And if you don't realize that your unique personality can see the world in a way that everybody else can't, if you haven't really gotten, you see things in life, you're walking through life, you're talking to your family or your friends, or you're at work, and you can just see, maybe you're better at organizing things than other people and you can see they don't understand, or maybe you're better at analyzing numbers, or maybe you're better at keeping track of things, or, imagining a list of to-dos or remembering stuff, or you're taking things apart and putting them back together or fixing the computer. There's something that you're really good at, and that's because you see the world in a unique way. You're the only one that sees it in exactly that way. And the more you get that, and that you get that you're like a searchlight relative to others, that other people are in the dark, and that you can teach other people this, and you can create knowledge, and you can create education that can really help lots of people. But you got to know that you're special, and you got to know how. And I feel like the personality type stuff really helps with that.
You've got me enamored with the different size brain cortex areas. I got a buddy who does qualitative EEGs, and I'm thinking, I wonder if he can look in there, because how cool would that be to give me proof to say, yeah, I have really great visual and language processing skills. My math stinks because I have no cortex at all there. It'd be interesting. I'll follow up on that. Well, I want to ask specifically what you just talked about in regards to entrepreneurs, because looking at our personality styles, and you've been involved in a lot of different businesses. I've been involved in a lot. I am now. I'm going into one now where I feel like it's an alternative health insurance product, and it's not my health insurance really. I have no part in that. But I do as far as what the product's going to deliver, and I know my role in it. So when you look at entrepreneurship specifically and you're understanding yourself and what your propensities are, I haven't thought about this for myself. I'm thinking about it out loud with you, but I'll put it on you to answer. Do you look at that one and engage it in regards to what type of a business you would go into, one, but then also what type of a role? Because I don't know if I would put what I'm made up of in some of the businesses in and of themselves, but in my role, I can specifically. But how do you, again, you're left with, we've got all these entrepreneurs out here in the audience right now who can look at that and go, okay, should I choose what exactly type of business I go into, or just know my role within it based upon my personality style?
Well, when you take the personality tests, they tell you different types of roles that are good for you, like what you'll probably be good at. And it's good to go try them out, you know, expose yourself to different things. Yeah. You know, an answer that comes up for me, I recommend that each of us around once a year start a new passion project. Okay, so a passion project would mean some new area of reality or life or some new interest that's very different from the things that you've done in the past. Okay, so it's got to be very different from the other things that you've done. And what you do is you make a decision, okay, this is going to be my passion project. I'm going to go learn about this. I'm going to go play with it. I'm going to study it. I'm going to just, you know, get involved in some way so that I can follow my passion here, right? And if you do this, it's probably good to do it at the beginning of the year. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're making your New Year's resolution, you got that energy and everyone's starting new things. And go get a couple of books, you know, maybe take a course, watch some videos, go online and find the forum where people are hanging out and talking about this thing. Make some friends, join some social media groups, go to the meetup locally, maybe go to the convention, wherever that is on that particular topic. And if it's something that you're really interested in, like you're genuinely interested in it and you want to learn about it, and then you find other people who are just genuinely interested in it and passionate about it and they want to learn about it, and you're hanging out and sharing ideas, then you maybe start a project of some kind. And it could be a simple project. It could be to, you know, maybe just get a meetup together, or it could be to create a course online where you teach, or maybe it could be to create a white paper or a product, or maybe you build something together. But you go to work with some other people doing something in that area. At first, it's more like a, you know, just something that you do for fun. And here's the key. You don't know how it's going to turn out. You don't make the decision it's going to be a business or it's going to be a philanthropy or it's going to be a hobby or whatever. You just go into it to get into it. And then once it gets some traction and you do something with your group and you see that there's, you know, maybe something that this could turn into, then you make a decision. You know what? Let's make a product and let's try to sell it, you know, or let's just do this as a philanthropy. Let's just give it away, or let's have an interest group, or let's have a hobby. You know, let's get a group of people together and let's all study this hobby. And if you do that maybe once a year, some of those will turn into businesses. Some of them will turn into just contribution projects. Some of them will turn into hobbies. But if you keep doing this, and again, different, very different, it has to be unique, some new area that you haven't learned about before, you will keep learning. You'll meet new diverse people from other worlds. You'll build an opportunity network. You'll be able to see between different domains. And that's where you really start seeing opportunities that are unique to you, where you could do something that is the intersection of a few different things and you're the only one there because they were your passion projects. And again, you know, some of them will turn into successful businesses and things that'll be really fulfilling. And I feel like that would be like a path to building a fulfilling life.
Absolutely. Well, when you look here again, just at opportunity, and you've got this book, you've got this message, and we're speaking to a big audience here. What is with you being, you're the opportunity evangelist, you're the advocate. What's a good perspective if you have to give a paradigm shift or some lenses to look through for all of us that you would say, this will help you, having this type of a mindset will help foster more opportunities, help you see more opportunities that are out there that you may be missing currently?
Right. Well, Wayne Dyer, he said, you'll see it when you believe it. Right. And part of what I'm trying to do with the book and why I work so hard on it is the book is a mindset shift that I'm trying to transmit what's in here into there. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to beam the ideas into your head so that when you think differently. When you move through reality and you look at things, you see them differently. And I will just guarantee you that if you read this book, you won't be able to see things the same way anymore. Nothing will appear exactly the way that was, and you'll see opportunities all around you that you didn't see, and you'll be able to estimate them and judge them and compare them to each other and make decisions on them in ways that you couldn't before. And a lot of it will be more automatic. And so you have to get the mindset. You have to believe it. You have to do what it takes to be able to find and see and create opportunities, because then once you do, you become, I think, a little bit more abundant in your thinking. You become more optimistic. You have to work a little bit harder because now you have to make decisions between these things. You know, as I say, more money, more problems. As you experience more success in your life, that brings other challenges. But what I've also found is that if you don't have increasing challenges in your life, then life's actually not that interesting. It's not that fun. You know, my family, my wife and my daughter, this is the hardest thing that I have ever done by a long shot. And we've been traveling a lot the last few years, last 3-4 years, we've been traveling more than 6 months. We go live in all these different places. And I mean, it's cool. And it's, you know, it's a fun romantic lifestyle, but it's hard. It is the hardest. I mean, you know, they say travel with someone if you want to know if you're compatible with them, because you'll get into a lot of conflict and stress and things. Challenge yourself. Sign up for challenges that are more and bigger and that really push you to your edge. I mean, this book, I still can't believe that I took on the challenge of writing a book that I was really going to write for a long time. It was hard. It was very challenging to do this. But now that I'm done, I just finished the last final touches on this book about 2 weeks ago, like just the final piece. And there was I am never going to write another book for the rest of my life. Like, I am just done with that. It's over. That sucked. And then after a few days, you know, and I started showing it to a few people, and people started coming back and reading it and saying, man, I mean, this is great. You know, I read the whole thing, and, you know, my wife said, I'm really proud of you. And then, you know, I got the physical copy and I started looking through it, and I was like, you know what? This isn't too bad. Maybe I should write another book. And, you know, and I'm crazy, but there's something to that. You know, it's like, if at the end of the day, you're tired, if you're tired because you didn't do anything, it's a totally different kind of tired than it's tired because you did everything. You know, the second kind is a satisfying kind of tired, where you, like, you go to sleep and you sleep really deeply and you sleep really well. The first kind is like, I'm just tired of being tired. And, you know, challenge yourself, put yourself into situations that you can't escape from, that force you to grow physically, to grow in success, to grow emotionally, to grow in relationships, to grow as a learning being, to grow in your purpose. Force yourself to do it. And then when you do, I mean, don't go jump off a cliff or like do something that's crazy or, you know, too dangerous, incremental challenges, but, you know, making yourself do things and setting the conditions so that you have to cope. Nathaniel Brandon, who I you know, very influenced by, I was fortunate enough to know him when he was alive. He's the father of self-esteem. You know, he said, self-esteem is your confidence in your ability to face the challenges, to cope with the challenges that life throws at you. If you have self-esteem, then you're confident that you can deal with what comes your way. If you don't have self-esteem, then you're not confident about the future. He also said that self-esteem is feeling that you deserve happiness. If you increase your challenges in different domains, you have to do it in the places where you wouldn't normally do it. So if you're socially awkward, challenge yourself to go and meet people and to have relationships. If you're financially, you know, challenged, financially challenged, go challenge yourself financially. Go, you know, go learn about investing, or, you know, go learn something. If you find yourself stagnant, you're not learning stuff, go read some books about how to learn and go challenge yourself in learning. But as you do this, and then you see yourself cope, and you have to when you're forced to, and then you do it, that's what builds self-esteem. That's what has you feel like, okay, I can do this. I'll tell you, I mean, I didn't think I was going to get married. I didn't think I was going to have a child, as I said. And this has been extremely emotionally challenging for me, because when you're dealing with, you know, not just one person that's maybe upset, but there are two of them, and there's nowhere to go. You can't, there's no escaping from this one, because the only escape is, like, I'm leaving, and I'm not leaving my family. I'm with this family for the rest of my life. We are staying together. We are going to figure this out. Even though in the moment I feel like, oh, I'm leaving. I'm, you know, this sucks. What am I doing here? And then you come back from it and you realize, no, wait a minute. I've got some emotional growth to do here. That means that I need to learn how to cope emotionally. I need to do some self-regulation. And then you go through that. I mean, I've been with my wife for coming up on 9 years. It's only been the last maybe year or two, in the last year in a lot of ways, where when I do get triggered or we get upset or we get in a fight about something, and then I come back and I know that I can cope, where I just have this knowing, even if I'm upset, where I say, no, I'm going to be okay through this. And in fact, you know what, I'm going to learn something from this, and we're going to be better. We're going to come out of this stronger. And gosh, it's building self-esteem. You know, it's a worthwhile investment in all domains of life.
I love that statement, building self-esteem, believing you deserve happiness.
Okay, I'm sure like myself, you are amped up about the opportunities in your life. Again, get Evan Pagan's new book, Opportunity, at zigshow.com/Evan, E-B-E-N. You get the hard copy, the bonuses of his best opportunities of 2018 live workshop, the video series that shows you how to find your big idea, and the opportunity discovery checklist exercises and bonus chapters, all free. You just pay the shipping. Again, go to zigshow.com/Eben. E-B-E-N. Hey, if you got value from the show, please let us know. Leave a review in iTunes and then email us at thanks@ziglarshow.com and tell us your iTunes username so we can thank you by sending you Zig Ziglar and Tom Ziglar's book, Born to Win, an actual hard copy. Let me tell you real quick about a great resource, then I'll fill you in on the next show. Coming up next in show 568, we hear a 3-minute heartfelt message from Zig Ziglar on faith. But it's not just a sermon. He's hitting on the reality of how faith impacts our literal lives. From it, I asked on Facebook, where you can join the discussion that we have every week. Just friend me at Agent K. Miller. And I asked this question, though. How has your faith in God or a higher calling tangibly benefited your physical, financial, or career/business success? That's a big question. You're going to want to hear what people had to say about it. Tune in then. Till then, thank you for letting me walk with you as we inspire our true performance together.